so hardly. How can people be so cruel? Easy to be hard, easy to be cold. How can people have no feeling? How can they ignore their friends? Easy to be proud.
Welcome to the French Connections Tuesday edition. This is an addendum edition. After all of you know that we did a wonderful interview with Ted Pike on the Talmud, on the problems of pedestry in the Talmud, and it was a very interesting and educational 1 hour talk we had. And now we're going to follow up that discussion on this Tuesday, the third day of October 2006, with a friend of mine. It's his third time, I believe, or maybe fourth time on the French Connection. His name is John DeCamp. He's a ex-senator from the state of Nebraska. He is a researcher, a lawyer, a writer, a fighter for the truth, in fact. He's put himself in harm's way, not only in his early career in Vietnam, but also as a politician that ended up having... He went up against the big guys in Nebraska as a state senator, and also against the elites as a defender of a young man named Paul Bonacci in the Franklin cover-up. And he wrote a book called The Franklin Cover-Up that has been actually well-received over the years as being a powerful indictment of what goes on in the halls of power, both in Washington and around the country. So I'm going to bring him up right now. John, are you with me?
I am indeed.
Nice to have you back, John. You know, this is percolating to the top of the news cycle once again. And as I mentioned to you privately, it seems like this is their control mechanism, and they're going to do this. They're going to hang this guy Foley out to let the others under their control know that not to mess around, it seems.
Yeah, you almost wonder if he isn't a visible sacrificial lamb, but then who knows?
Mm. Well, since, you know, the events of your case, I remember you telling me clearly that at first, when you started looking into these facts, there was nothing in your person that would believe the story that this young man told you. Yet, you, as you dug into it, what did you find, John, as you dug deeper?
Well, start at the beginning, you said it right. In fact, that's how I got involved, because when some strange stories started filtering on the street from these young people after this Franklin Credit Union had been raided back when the credit unions were collapsing and all kinds of terrible things were occurring, I was one of the first ones that stood up publicly and said, well, this all has to be just a lot of fantasy and nonsense, because if anybody really seriously believed the stories that are coming out on the street from these kids, I said, well, if you really believed it, I said, then I'd be the first one to step forward and insist we do something about it. But this is like la-la land. Well, I got a letter from some kid that had been arrested on the night of the Franklin raid when the feds raided the credit union, and he had been picked up that night and put in jail on some old spurious grounds that he touched, kind of like Foley, that he touched his cousin on the outside of his pants in the wrong place or something. Anyway,
yeah.
So the kid wrote me a letter and said, well, Mr. DeCamp, I read your stuff and heard about you, and if you'd come talk to me, I could tell you where to find some stuff that would prove it's not just fantasy or la-la land like you claim. And I thought, well, I better put my actions where my mouth has been. So I went to Omaha, where he was locked up, and visited with him, and he had some strange stories. But more important than anything else, some things that locations he told me where he had hidden certain things. And if I'd go and look at those places, I'd find these things. One of them was a set of diaries, and ever since he was a little boy, his grandfather had taught him to keep a diary, and so he kept a diary of everything. I thought, well, heck, I'll go check that out. And I went and found these diaries, just like he said they would be hidden in this place, and first thing I did, though, was I went and took them to one of the group of these companies that analyzes writing and printing and ink and all that to see if, it's legitimate or whatever. And they came back and they concluded, yeah, this is all kinds of different ink because some of it didn't exist in this year and others did. Anyway, one thing led to another, and some of the stories then he had written in there, I started checking out, and pieces fell into place, and unfortunately then I was in the midst of it and representing and defending the kid, and I went from there on and on and on and on.
And you found there were other kids involved here, weren't there? Like with this girl, Kimberly and Nellie. Did you ever speak to these two?
I think I did. Now remember, this all started, close to
85, 86,
got really heavy in 88, 91. Anyway,
right.
I'm sure I did. I just don't remember all the kids I spoke to now, and I'm pretty cautious about saying anything if I don't absolutely remember it or have it documented somewhere, as you well know from previous experience.
Yeah. Well, everything I did write
in that book, when the book first came out, by the way, I don't know if I told you this, but a bunch of very fairly prominent people whose names you'd recognize, had some lawyers have a press conference, and they said, well, this is the most libelous, horrible thing that had ever been written, or on and on and on, and that this man, DeCamp, would be sued and his bar or, lawyer license taken away, and libel and slander, and on and on and on. So I immediately had a press conference right afterwards, and I said, hey, I just happen to agree with these guys that these are the worst, most terrible things anybody could say about anyone, and so on and so forth. And I said, however, these people all know, and the lawyers all know, that there is one magic thing, the first thing you learn in law school, that, quote, truth. Truth is an absolute defense to any claims of slander or libel. And I said, in this case, I'm ready to prove every single thing I wrote, and if I can't prove it, I didn't say it. And I, of course, there were no lawsuits against me or for the book.
And no subsequent attacks against your license either, were there?
No, they tried. They tried everything. But anyway,
So
as I've said often since I wrote that book and it's all happened and got so deeply involved, I truly can say I wish I never knew any of this. I wish I never knew this existed. I think it was a prettier, happier, better world before I knew.
Yeah, well, the fact is, unless we face the rot within our system, we're all going to become victims of these kinds of things. So
I know, and my children, of course, were all growing up during years from every one of them had scary things, and they still harbor scary things as a result of it. We talk about it a lot more now, but at the time, they were scared. I mean, truly scared that somebody would show up, because we had so many people. Incidents where people disappeared, kids disappeared, and ended up...
How many people were disappeared as a result of this investigation?
I only know about, I think I list maybe 15 or 20 at the end of the book. And then, of course, there's been more since that last part of that book. There was, for example, one of the most prominent ones of all walked into a hospital, I believe it was in New Mexico here. Oh, was it a year and a half ago, I might have been. A kid named Troy Boner was
yep.
The central figures of the book, and he's waving the book. And he's screaming, they're after me, they're after me, they're after me because of this book. And the hospital personnel calmed him down and put him in a room and thought he was, hysterical and obviously. Anyway, the next morning they came in, he was sitting in the chair, bleeding out the mouth, quite dead. So who knows?
Yeah.
And so many of them like that.
Well, and we had Rusty Nelson involvement, and we also had Hunter Thompson. What can you tell us about Hunter Thompson's involvement in this?
I do not know Hunter Thompson. I never met him personally. However, he was one of the characters that at least a couple kids identified as being directing some of these, I hate to say it, but porn snuff films of children where a child is actually literally killed or sacrificed in kind of a ceremonial, almost a satanic cult type thing. And it was interesting that what happened to Mr. Thompson. Who knows the real story there?
Well, if he was directing the actual killing of children,
well,
what he got was his just desserts. I just wish we got the story before it happened.
Yeah. Well, I certainly had my story out before.
Yeah.
Before it happened about Hunter Thompson, and anyway.
Well, you know, now
we're killed in California.
Well, how pervasive do you believe in your professional estimation, after having been victimized by these facts? Because all of us who know these facts feel victimized in some way. How deep does the rot go in your estimation?
How deep?
How deep in our political structure does this activity go? Because it's become very clear to my partners and my research partners that this is in fact not an isolated situation, but rather status quo in some instances, or in most instances.
Well, I guess I think it probably goes a lot deeper and broader and higher up, if you want to use a phrase, than I ever dreamed, or most citizens that ever dream or want to believe or find it even possible to believe. At the same time, I guess I'm not just sure that it's getting less. I thought maybe when I wrote a bunch about it, and you know the reason I even wrote that, don't you? Wrote
right.
The book. It was because my best friend, my kind of...
Yeah, Bill Colby, right?
And whatever, he told me to write it, and he told me he'd defend it, and then he went on, he let himself be recorded on national TV program, on the Discovery program, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And let himself be recorded, because Discovery and the BBC or whatever it was came over and spent, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 months filming and documenting and proving everything.
Yes, Carlton International did a special.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, and called Conspiracy of Silence.
That's right.
They insisted on him being physically there in person recording and saying, yes, he believed what John DeCamp was saying and so on and so forth. And this was, you know, the former head of the CIA, Central Intelligence Agency, who had been my boss over in Vietnam during the war when I was a young combat infantry captain over there anyway, and wasn't a terribly long time after that he had the mysterious death. And do I believe his death was part of this whole thing? Yes. Do I have any proof? No. So once again,
well, you know, Kay Griggs was someone who was also consulted by Bill Colby, and she was told to get as big a profile as possible to protect herself. And she did that. She went public with what she knew because she said she was told the farther in the shadow she stays with her story, the more likely it will be that something terrible will happen to her.
Yes, I think that was kind of the same message to me.
Well, Bill actually, she told me she credits Bill Colby for keeping her alive. She said. Well, you know, we look at this kind of stuff, and the facts are, there are only a few ways you can buy up the loyalty of someone. One of them is with money. One of them possibly is with crime, and the other one is with sex. And when you've got two of those things, crime and sex, because of course children are off limits, and of course the sexual picadillos are hot news. You've got control of a government, and what I'm trying to say now is there are powerful interests across our country that would not hesitate to use this kind of control to their advantage. Are you aware of any groups that could be begin to be looked at as responsible for this control?
Oh, just sitting here, just got back from the doctor's office where I had surgery a couple weeks ago, and I'm kind of having a fog, but... I mentioned some of them in the book, specifically the NAMBLA thing, which I'd never even heard of, North American Man-Boy Love Association.
Mm-hmm.
When I first wrote about it back then, it was pretty well an unknown thing, and now, of course, it's pretty well known and just what it is. But there's these peripheral organizations like that operate on the fringes and are visible, but there's a lot of horrible, horrible horrible evil that is well concealed and involves some people that you'd never dream or suspect, particularly some politicians on occasion that have gotten themselves compromised. And there's nothing more dangerous for a system like ours than compromising and controlling via blackmail this or that politician who's literally holding the life strings of your society, you know.
That's right.
I guess I am satisfied here after the original investigation book was written, and then I've redone updates about four times since then.
Well, what is the latest update that you've provided us with? What's some of the information you've updated?
Oh, let's see. The latest one was February of this year, I think, and I updated on what some of the people have done, and of course I got deeply involved in that crazy Oklahoma bombing and then the Columbine thing where I was the lawyer for some of the kids and just a bunch of these other cases and just a bunch of things there I brought up to date and some of the personalities and so on.
Well, it's our take that the school shootings across the country, John, are an attempt for the controllers to have a reason to confiscate our guns, and if not confiscate them, at least chronologize and codify all of the ownership in the country so that they know who's holding the guns and who isn't. And it seems like this latest shooting might fit into that profile as well, the one in Pennsylvania.
That may be. I do not know or have the proof, and as you know, I'm super cautious if I don't have it, and I can spit it out myself and say it, and dare I do anything about it, I don't say it. It sure has some of those characteristics, though. They're just being used too often, and you've read the new Patriot Law, I'm sure.
Yep.
Some of the things that have happened there in the last month or two even. And I truly believe you keep going much further and you'll have a cage built around us that anybody who wants in a position of power in this country, any president can just snap his fingers and they can pretty well corral anybody they want or separate them or do whatever they want.
Under law. Well, yeah, under the color of law because it's not constitutional. Uh-huh. But who cares about what constitutional in this government? They don't seem to give two shakes about it. But what I've been trying to dig out here, and our bailiwick here has been the control of the JDL, the ADL, and some of these other organizations that have been powering us toward our own destruction here. And you can take a look at who really controls the organs of power in the country, and judgeships. We're talking about the Congress, we're talking about our media, we're talking about, you take a look anywhere where there's power involved, it's this group. And I'm wondering what kinds of things you've discovered in your, dealings with judges and with all of these power structures, if you've come across the same kinds of things.
Yeah, in fact, I think I comment about that pretty heavily at the end of the book. I don't know if I had that in the original book. I guess I'm sure I didn't. That was prompted by some of those cases. You know, I took the one case to court all the way and won the $1 million judgment for the boy, even though the judge hated me for dragging in the proof and having pictures and things and so on and so forth. But one of the things that then came out of that was then I tried to help some of the other kids, and I had this Troy Boner, the one I told you about.
Yep.
Walked into the hospital. Well, anyway, he was the key witness against this one girl, Alicia. He had been the one that originally had told the truth and then switched his story because the FBI told him he'd be in jail. And so he switched his story and testified. And then after she had been in prison a couple of years, he came to me and just all kinds of strange stories. I got him on tape and affidavits and got him interviewed even by that BBC group or whatever it was that was here and did that. And so we went back into court. And this actually happened then literally on the day we walked into court. He walks in and he's pulled aside by a bunch of officials. And I raise a little ruckus, but they make it clear that this is a top authority, you know, the FBI and prosecutors and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, when he walked out, he just shook his head, looked at me, couldn't look at me, just looked up long enough to say, I can't do it. They said if I talk today, I'll be in prison for 20 years, same as Alicia. We went into court, I asked him his name. He said, I refuse to answer on the grounds that it might incriminate me. I said, I went through his entire affidavit, question by question. I refuse to answer, I take the Fifth Amendment. Anyway, and of course, was after that, then I walked in, I was sitting with the judge, and this story is in the latest book, and I just hung my head and I said, Your Honor, you know, I don't understand how a system gets like this. You know, and I know, you know the truth here. And he said to me, listen to me, I am a judge. I have to do what I have to do with the evidence before me. You know what the evidence before me is. Therefore, I can do no other thing than what I've done, which is to dismiss this appeal. And I reopened the case. He said, I have no choice. I just don't understand. And then for some reason, this judge said to me, he said, John, if you want to understand, go read Billy Budd. I said, what? He said, go read Billy Budd.
Billy Budd?
Maybe that'll answer your question. Well, I guess I didn't think much more about it. By the way, the judge is now in the Supreme Court or whatever. But anyway, got promoted right quick after that.
To the Supreme Court of the United States?
No, Nebraska, I believe.
Nebraska, okay.
Anyway, so I was watching old movies, you know, like you do on television board one night. This movie, Billy Budd, comes on, and by God, I made sure I watched and it did answer a lot of questions, and I explained that in the book. And Billy Budd, you know, back in the days of the British Empire, the British Navy was king of the hill and the seas and everything else, and they had a bit of a problem with some, insurrection or mutiny on some ship, and so they had to crack down. And they made it clear that anybody who mutinized or led a mutiny or caused trouble, you know, bam, that was a hanging offense, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And right out there. So anyway, the story of this Billy Budd in real simple terms. By the way, this is a famous book. You know that, I assume.
Yes.
Anyway, and Billy Budd, this young sailor on a ship, and this officer on the ship, kind of jealous of him for some reason or other, and really picks on him, and... Anyway, to make a long story short, a crime is committed that Billy Budd didn't do at all. And the entire officer crew who has to do the court-martial, they know it. But for the sake of order and because of all the problems, they know they have to have a conviction and a sacrifice. So Billy is convicted and, of course, hung. And the essence of the story, as I wrote in my book, was... You know, the only thing more sacred than everything else is the system, because it's the one that assigns and gives you your place and your power, whether you be the powerful businessman or politician or judge or whatever, particularly judges. And therefore, the first rule of everything is maintain and protect the system no matter what it all costs.
Well, you know, when the criminals are in charge, I think it's every American's responsibility to fight for the liberty that we are promised. I mean, we've been promised something in our documents that is not being delivered, John.
Yes, I totally, totally agree with you. I'm just telling you what position I think we've come to.
Well, how are we going to get from where we are to where we need to go without having to descend into tyranny? I mean, we're on the verge of full-fledged tyranny as we speak, and I'm wondering how are we going to get the American public, or even a portion of the American public, to understand that this is going to require some sacrifice on the part of everyone.
Well, I rather suspect it's not going to happen in a blip, but it's going to happen over repeated examples like unfortunately and tragically, like this Franklin thing and a lot of the other things that are happening today, and people like you and others that, that are standing up and speaking out and proving the stuff. And I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, this is the worst thing you're going to hear me say today. I can't guarantee the good people are going to win. I don't know.
Yeah.
I do hope it works out that way, just like you do, and you die for it at the same time. I've learned, as I say, I wish I never knew any of this, wish I'd never heard of any of it, wish I didn't believe any of it, because it sure was a kind of a prettier world to march through when the flowers are all there and blooming and you don't know the evil things.
Well, the saddest thing is there are still new victims being born. There are still new sacrifices being made, and literal sacrifices, children being killed, confiscated from their homes and flown into the United States from places like the Balkans and around the world. We have child sex slavery and trafficking of these children, to provide people for them. And we've also got this MK Ultra program that Offit was once in charge of, and,
that's fairly prominent in my book, and that was one of the things that I think the Conspiracy of Silence program focused on. By the way, you know what happened to Conspiracy of Silence movie?
No.
It was in every advertised. Conspiracy of Silence was the name. It was in every TV guide and news.
Yes, that's right, yes.
And literally at the last minute, it was pulled, and the only reason people have copies today is a pirated copy was sent to me, and I just made sure I got it into enough hands that I guess it's all over the internet and everywhere else now.
Well, it's going to be part of this interview. You're going to see a link to watching it again if you go to this interview. What is happening here is, I believe, much of this stems from some elites wanting to have control of the country, and them promoting this kind of sickness within their political structure so that control can be exerted. And you'll find it in Europe as well, out of Brussels. Brussels is the capital for this sickness in Europe.
Remember, I can't even remember everything in my book, but I think I mentioned, Paul described that as one of the places where he was regularly flown to.
And Brussels, Europe?
Brussels, over in Europe.
Yeah, well, that's where the European elites, abuse children. And, the Mark Dutroux case up here, has generated about 25 murders. So this is a Western world global problem, and it seems to be that the people get promoted within the political structure have been compromised by these acts. And of course, you're going to get someone's loyalty if they're wealthy, been made wealthy by a political system that allows them favors, and if they turn on that system, they're exposed as a pedophile. You'll get a lot of yeses from that, won't you?
I'm back to that final thing in my book, the story of Billy Budd. You know, the officers all knew he was innocent. They also knew that to maintain the order and their place in the system and so on and so forth, they had to protect the real guilty one, the officer, and so they convicted Billy, hanged him, and on and on. And that, but unfortunately, on a major, huge, gigantic scale, is in a very true and honest sense what has transpired here in the United States of America.
Well, you know, I'm going to harken back to my previous statement. We've proven the participation. You don't know much about this possibly, but we've proven the participation of the Israelis in the explosion of the 9/11 buildings, as well as the full attack.
I've heard such things, but do I have knowledge of it? No.
Well, no, not necessarily the knowledge, but we've done our due diligence. I can say that to you, fully confident that I can prove it. But here's the problem. We're not getting the traction we need, John, and I'm wondering how we could possibly push this thing further into the public. I mean, your book has had hundreds of thousands of copies demanded, but still only a very small portion of the population knows the truth about Franklin and the rest of it. What are we doing wrong not to get this further out?
I guess I'm not the person to ask. I wonder the same thing myself. What does it take? Sometimes when the proofs are so obvious and the lie is so big on the other side, And I guess I don't have the answer. I'm like you. I have the question. What in blazes does it take? Normally, you would believe, hey, good grief, we've got the freest press in the world, investigative press. If ever there's some things for them to look into and step up to the, step up to the line and expose it and prove it, where's correction? But if anything, it seems like they duck away.
Well, you know darn well we don't have a free press, and that's exactly what, I mean, during the case that was going on, your Franklin case, there was probably only scant coverage, if any, wasn't there?
Well, there was heavy coverage sometimes, but frequently it would start out as something to prove the exact opposite of what was going on, and basically one time after another, we were pretty lucky and got breaks that even I called little mini miracles one after another. One of the first ones was they were going to prove that I, John DeCamp, who forced a grand jury to be called, that I was lying and making up stuff and on and on and off. And then one of the key people I named, one of the editors, the entertainment editor of the Omaha World Herald, well, when his name came out in my claim, as I point out in the book, a bunch of little kids, their parents knew, they hung around with them and various things, so they started quizzing them one after another. These kids started laying out things, and some of these parents that knew nothing about it and didn't want to believe it now knew they, and that forced issues, so he was the one that was going to file the official lawsuit against me and expose me, while he ended up pleading guilty and going to prison then for a bunch of stuff, and that was their first major attack, and there were 100 others like it, but so it ain't easy getting the job done.
Has Alicia Owens been released from prison?
Alicia Owens is released. She doesn't see anybody or talk to anybody about this. Part of her conditions of parole, even though she spent the longest time, I think, in prison in the history of the country for supposedly a teenage girl that allegedly she was convicted of perjury, saying the police chief was diddling her and so on and so forth. Anyway, I think one of the conditions of her parole is she never talks about it or anything, and after she'd be in prison for, what, 8 or 10 years, I don't blame her for agreeing to do whatever's necessary to get out and be with her child. Anyway.
Yeah.
So,
well,
it's a powerful system you're up against and so on. And,
well, you know, we've what's your experience been with Ted Gunderson?
Well, that's interesting. Ted,
yeah, because he's still putting himself out there as one of the truth guys.
Well, I think he is one of the truth guys, probably as much or more than anybody.
You think he's telling the truth?
Yes, I do. You want some more?
Well, yeah, I do. I'm
hired for originally, don't you?
What was that?
To prove I was full of beans. He was a retired FBI, and he had grown up and gone to the University of Nebraska and was on the University of Nebraska football team back way before God and on and on and on. And, of course, had friends back here, even though he became the head of the FBI in Los Angeles and other places. Anyway, when this got going hot and heavy, he was hired by some of his old friends, some of the star old football players whose names are famous and you'd recognize, I'm sure. Anyway, to come back and use his prestige and power and investigate and prove that old John DeCamp was lying about this and on and on and on. So he came back, and, yeah, he came on like he kind of smiles whenever I tell this. Anyway, so he came on like gangbusters and really went crazy investigating, and I just said, hey, man, here's my office. You're welcome to look at absolutely anything I got. I got nothing to hide, but a lot of other people, too. So he, to my shock, ended up being my strongest defender and verifying, and then went to these people and told them that John DeCamp is the one telling the truth, and blah, blah, blah. So then they fired him. And that's how we first got to even know each other, And we maintained contact over the years, one after another. He had his private investigative agency in Las Vegas and handled a number of cases, and he'd call me every once in a while. But are you ready for the shocker on the story now?
Mm-hmm.
Probably about 3 months ago, I get this call from this man named Ted Gunderson.
Yeah.
He says, John, I need help. I says, well, what do you need? He says, I need a place to live. I need to get out of where I am right away. And this is the first time I've publicly told this story. I don't know if I should. But anyway, what the heck? Ken won't mind. And I says, well, yeah, he says, do you have a place for me for a while? And I says, well, yeah, I suppose. And I says, let me know what you need. And didn't think any more about it. Hell, it wasn't 48 hours later. This semi pulls up in front of my place here in this little town of Claytonia, Nebraska. 287 people in the little village I live in. My law offices are all in Lincoln, the big city, but I live out here kind of in a little country area, a little dinky town where I could raise my kids. I moved out here because of that stupid Franklin thing after the first book came out. And kids got some threats, and I just wanted to be where I kind of felt a little more controlled. Anyway, and so he shows up here, and so I fixed him up with a house here, and he's living here now in Claytonia, Nebraska, and two blocks down the street, one of my houses. I have half a dozen houses.
Well, you know, he actually got himself railroaded, I think, with some crack girl that was saying that they were Filipino terrorists going to do some damage inside of Los Angeles. And he got in touch with me, and I tried to get the story out, but it didn't gel correctly, and it turned out to be, I think they were trying to set him up, is what I think.
Might well be. I know the thing you're talking about I'm just vaguely familiar with, but for whatever reason, he believes there are going to be some pretty serious, that's going to be the next terrorist event. I sure don't know, and I don't press him on it. Your good friend, as I say, started out, he was going to...
Well, how about a guy named Jimmy Rothstein? Do you know about Jimmy?
Jimmy was a detective in New York. Once again, this is years ago. I haven't seen him or talked to him for years and years, but he was one of those that got involved in looking into some of the things that I was claiming in the book, and I think he became one of my strongest supporters in defending and exposing some things and proving some things.
Yeah, and he and I have been working together right along, John.
Oh, okay. Well, then you can.
Yeah, he's a good friend. I've been working with Jimmy for a long time, and now let's go on to one other person here, Kathy O'Brien and her husband.
Okay. So you know, I don't know the validity or non-validity, and I don't claim to. Kathy O'Brien and Mark, what's his name?
Mark Phillips. Yeah.
Mark Phillips showed up on my doorstep here, and this has got to be way, way years and years ago, and maybe it might have been in about 1991 or so after my first book or first edition of this thing came out when I was still way up to my eyebrows in it. But anyway, and they lived here then a while, and I kind of told them the same thing. I said, you know, I'm in a world I know nothing about, and of course, Kathy's story, you know what it is. And I said, I truly don't know the truth or falseness. It's a world that even today to me is so sick and so fantasy-laden, you know what I'm saying at all?
I do know,
yeah.
I don't
want to believe it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I don't know. It's an insane world that you don't want to believe exists. And Kathy and Mark went off, left here, then after they'd been here several months, staying here, and went off and told his story or her story or whatever. And of course, there's arguments. Anyway.
Well, I've never had a problem with her being a victim. I have had a problem with the way it's told through him.
Say the rest of it. I believe she definitely is. My big question there is, don't take this wrong, is it over though?
Yeah. Well,
you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. And those are my sentiments exactly. Well, you know, the stuff that we're trying to do right now is we're trying to link today's news with actions in the past. And of course, you don't have any maybe direct evidence, and nor do I. But I can tell you this, and this is, I can say this with an amount of surety here, that whatever brought these issues up when you were doing this report and doing the defense of Mr. Bonacci, is still quite active and quite alive in Washington D.C., albeit a little less flamboyant than the Franklin days. But I got to tell you, Larry King is back out and he's still circulating in Washington D.C.
He sure is, resting in Virginia.
Yeah, and he's still doing his thing over there, and he was never convicted of anything to do with this pedophilia. And the fact is, I'm certain that this stuff is still as rampant, if not worse, than it was.
I will agree with you on one thing, probably even stronger than you said it.
Yeah.
It ain't less. It's one heck of a lot more, and a lot more sophisticated and organized, and they don't take any prisoners.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
Hey, listen,
well,
I'm going to run along.
I can accept that too. You know, listen, I'd
get together any other time you want and do another hour or so.
Well, John, you know, I got to tell you, thank you very much, and our listeners are going to be very appreciative of this, and you give my best to your family, and make sure you keep yourself safe over there, and you know, these things have a way of working themselves out. We're gonna figure out who's done what, and you just keep watching the news headlines. We're gonna make headlines one of these days.
Keep at it.
Thanks, John.
Talk to you later.
All right, sir.
Holler anytime.
You betcha.
Bye bye.
Bye bye now. Ladies and gentlemen, John DeCamp, a friend of mine, and in fact, he's probably done more to get this news out than anybody in the world, and I got to tell you, it breaks my heart to even read things like this, but you know, Eric and I have been putting this story out even when it wasn't in front line news. We've been letting the world know about this for a very long time, and we've known that this was the way things are being controlled. I can tell you that this guy Hassert is involved. I can tell you that John McCain is involved. I can tell you that there are many of our politicians bought and paid for. How do I know? Well, let them refute it. I'll tell you something right now. These guys are bad to the bone. And this guy Hassert used to be a a wrestling coach. Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, I'm sure he's wrestling with his conscience all the time, but you think he's just protecting the Republicans? No, 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 no. There's a lot more to what he's been doing than just that. This participation stuff going on, and it's still happening over there, ladies and gentlemen. This is just a big nest of pedophiles that are running our government, and we've known it for a long time, and the same is true here in Europe. So sad to bring you that kind of report. We've had two today terrible subjects, but they're all terrible because when you're losing your freedom and you're watching your country be destroyed from within, no subject is a pleasant one. But until next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith saying bye-bye now. Be well.